Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching never changed anything.
And I got off on it.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Karnataka, southwest India, a land of temples, lush forests, but little electricity. With over 18,000 families lacking access to the grid, when the sun goes down, vast swathes of the region are shrouded in darkness. Solar energy has the potential to bring light to every home.
The people living in these areas are never going to have access to electricity. The only option for them to ever access power would be to use solar energy.
Set up 10 years ago, Selco Solar Energy is now working across the state, providing reliable and affordable energy to over 40,000 families. Selco's team of local technicians from Udupi are loading up a system to head off into the forest. Today, they're making a round trip to the Belsangadi region to bring light into the lives of another family. When they arrive, the technicians get straight to work, opening up the roof and finding the best spot for the solar panel.
Whenever we bring a solar system to a new site, we first select where to mount the panel. There are several restrictions. It must be south-facing and shadow-free. Then we consult with the customer where to keep the battery and where to install the lights.
This installation will power four lights. The solar panels produce a 12-volt, 40-watt charge, which is connected to a 60-amp-hour lead-acid battery, giving each light 4 hours life per day. A charge regulator is installed to help recharge the battery. After just 2 hours, the system is up and running, much to the delight of the proud new owners.
We're very happy with the new light. The children can now read with it, so we're very pleased.
The word is spreading. At this women's group, they're discussing the new technology. Selco's dealer explains how the system works and how to pay. There are over 5,000 self-help groups like this across Karnataka, with women clubbing together to take out small loans. Costing roughly $400 per unit, it's crucial that financing is thought through carefully.
As a group, this group has a greater chance of accessing bank funds because the bank also finds a greater security in the group borrowing because there is peer pressure to return the money back and ensure that the payments are done in time.
The meeting is being held at the home of Geeta Koragappa, who bought her system a year ago. She saves money by not having to buy kerosene and having time to work in the evenings.
After installing the solar light, I can save 40 or 50 rupees a month, which I use to pay for the loan for the system.
Another crucial factor is aftercare. Selco has a network of service centres where staff provide technical support to customers. Each centre has strict monthly targets and uses local agents.
The traditional problem with solar energy was systems were supplied in the areas and then it was not followed up with support. So what we have done is we have created these localized service centers within a distance of 100 to 150 kilometers from the customer's place, and these centers provide service to the individual customer.
Each service center has at least two technicians who tour the region and visit each installation every 3 months to service the system and make sure they're being used properly.
This system was installed 6 months ago, so it's scheduled for another service. First, we clean dust and burr droppings off the solar panel, then check float levels on the battery and top it up if needed. Then we clean the terminals and smear on Vaseline, check the current and the connections, and finally clean any insects off the lights.
Bringing light to the region has also brought benefit to local traders. These street hawkers in Bundapur are all using solar power. They're members of a light cooperative project started by a local NGO in partnership with Selco and run by local entrepreneurs. There are now over 70 stores here using solar light, and the scheme has been replicated in 13 places across the state.
Every morning the batteries are charged using solar panels, so I take the batteries that are fully charged and come and meet the hawkers every evening at 4:30. They give me a 12 rupee fee, then they discharge the batteries in the evening and I charge them all up again the next day, and so it goes on every day.
In recognition of the project's success and its contribution to sustainable development, Selco have been shortlisted for an Ashton Award. They now hope to reach the poorest sections of the community.
We intend to use the Ashton Award to create income generation activities
to pay back the bank loans and make solar systems viable for them.
With over 46% of homes in India off the grid, and many more with unreliable electricity, Selco is hoping to replicate the success of Karnataka across India.
Solar Now is a renewable energy company that began its operations in Uganda in 2011. It currently has 47 operational branches in Uganda and 9 operational branches in Kenya. Solar Now provides both small household systems which range from 50 watt peak to 200 watt peak and large home solar systems which range from 250 to 3 kilowatts. These are both used for domestic and commercial purposes. Solar Now has been able to transform the rural commercial farmers by bringing products like a water pump.
I'm a farmer at Mvuvu Village, Narigasa sub-count, Niraka, in Chotera district. I have passion fruits, green peppers, I have coffee, oranges, and I have banana.
I put water in this pipe because it helps the other machine to start.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry, because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here. But the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission to produce new products for every corner of the globe that could forever change the way we think of made in China. Step behind the closed doors of modern China into a factory the size of a city. Welcome to the place that calls itself Factory of the World. By the time you finish watching this program, Yupa's 17,000 Chinese workers will produce nearly 20,000 electrical appliances. Every day they churn out 60,000 irons. Every month, Yupa makes 36,000 coffee makers. That's two new machines for every Starbucks on the planet. And every year, these laborers produce a staggering 18 million electric grills. Stacked side by side, they'd span the Atlantic from New York to London. Chances are you own something built right here. Factories like these don't exist in North America or Europe, but they're not uncommon in China, where labor is cheap. Yupa runs on human sweat alone. No need for robots. To ensure non-stop production, workers need a steady stream of parts. Someone has to make sure those parts get to the right place in time. This is Ming Long Pa. He started work at Yupa in 1994.
I'm in charge of production control. Production control is the brain of the factory. Its main function is to coordinate each department.
If any of Yupa's factories run out of parts, Mr. He's job is on the line.
The production line cannot wait. We have to guarantee that our production is smooth. Running out of materials would affect our efficiency, affect our productivity, and affect our revenue. So I have to fix this in the shortest time possible.
Today, a problem at the iron factory needs smoothing out. Workers on the iron line are low on a crucial part. To keep up production, they need 2,000 units, and they need them now.
Just now I found out the main problems here at the iron department. One major problem is the case for model 603. They need 2,000 right now.
Traditional plants use outside suppliers for their components, not Yupa. To slash costs and stay competitive, Yupa builds its own parts on site. So Mr. He's supplier is only a bike ride away. But even the supplier is dangerously low on stock. Mr. He has found barely enough parts to last the day. When he gets another urgent call. Now the grill factory is low on a crucial component. Grills are the company's most profitable products. Yupa started producing one line of grills in 1994. Now, 60 assembly lines churn out 800 different models. Workers make one grill every 12 seconds. That's 50,000 grills per day, or 1.5 million per month. Enough grills for every person in Dallas. Grills bring in $350 million a year, but Yupa wants more. Little wonder Lu Jinye acts like a general leading his troops to war. By next year, managers expect workers to crank out $500 million worth of grills. Yupa's profits have to rise to outmuscle the competition. Mr. Ye supervises 850 workers on 30 lines.
We have to coordinate all these workers and pull all their thoughts into one. It takes teamwork to accomplish our goals, to get the results we want.
Mr. Ye is obsessed with quality control. His aim? Boost output without compromising quality. In a factory this big, with a production run so massive, even the hyper-efficient Mr. Ye hits a roadblock.
This holder piece holds the grill plate. What we're seeing now is the assembly of this piece. The problem is the size. It's the wrong size.
They've run out of part number 2627. It attaches the core heating element to the frame. Without this simple component, assembly lines will shut down, unless Mr. Ha finds a fresh supply, and soon.
If we don't get them the parts, 6 production lines will have to stop.
When every part is on hand, grills assemble like a simple puzzle. Wires are linked to the heating element, and the element is fixed to the plate.
When it's not locked down properly, it will fall off. If it falls off, it will burn the hands of our customers and consumers. This job is very important.
Then it's time to connect the power cord.
The brown wire is live and the green wire is neutral. The one with the writing on it matches the brown wire. Connect them and that makes the wire live.
Each grill is inspected for flaws in construction or appearance. Finally, every grill is tested to make sure everything is in working order. On a typical day, Mr. Ye's team must make 700 of Yupa's 50,000 grills. Missing parts cause delays, cost Yupa a fortune, and force workers into overtime to meet their quota. Finding the missing parts falls to Mr. Ha, and the pressure is on. Mr. He finally arrives, and he has good news. He's found 2,000 parts to keep the lines moving, and 50,000 more are on the way. Mr. He's day has ended on a high note. He heads home to a company-subsidized apartment only minutes away. His wife, Hong Zhang-Yu, also works for the plant. Together, they lead a life of relative luxury. Family life in China is a communal affair. His parents and his in-laws live here, thanks to Yupa. It's one more reason workers are fiercely loyal to their company.
Our products all have the Made in China tag. I hope our products can bring to consumers a sense of joy, a sense of it's worth it. This is my biggest wish.
Fulfilling that wish will come at a cost.
When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Yupa's next generation of workers must leave their families behind and devote their lives to the company. It's a place tourists never see. The new face of modern China. Competitive, hungry for profits, and ready to take on the world. Located near the city of Xiaomeng, the Yupa complex sprawls for 1.8 square kilometers, almost the size of Monaco.
We have about over 20 buildings here. You know, the largest building, you know, equal like 4 football fields. You can have 60 to 70 assembly line. Each assembly line can have 25 to 35 workers in the line.
25 years ago, there were no factories here, only farms. In the 1980s, the Chinese government decided capitalism wasn't so bad after all. The communist regime established so-called special economic zones, designated places for free markets and foreign investments. Yupa, a Taiwanese company, moved here in 1988. In a few short years, it became the largest manufacturer of irons, electric grills, and espresso makers in the world. Yupa is a city unto itself, with restaurants and convenience stores, soccer fields and basketball courts, and living quarters for everyone from students to families. Success made it big, and size keeps it successful. Mass production runs push down costs. Almost all parts are made on-site, keeping supply costs low and parts within easy reach.
Because we are in this location pretty much isolated, we don't have satellite suppliers around us to build, you know, parts for us. So we had to do it in-house, and we had to do it in a large scale.
Yupa's main advantage is a cheap and endless labor force, ready to work for a fraction of a Western wage. 16-year-old Mao Fen Guo left her family and came here in 2008. But Guo isn't just looking for work. She's here to escape poverty and make her mother proud. In China, many parents prefer sons to daughters.
My mother has only 2 daughters. She's always upset about that. And in order to not let her down, I must work harder and harder.
Guo is a worker in training. With about 1,000 other students, she attends Yupa's on-site trade school. To get here, she had to pass entry exams and pay Yupa tuition. Now she's enrolled in 3 years of study and hands-on training at the factory. If she does well, Guo hopes for a job at Yupa.
At the very beginning, I thought it was very hard. But now that I've gone through all this, it's easier. There's a lot to learn, but I'm still full of confidence.
Today, she and her classmates are learning everything they ever wanted to know and more about irons.
Okay, let's see. We're sort of in scramble mode today. All right, well, here we're going to go. Today, because we're preparing for our offline projects and whatnot, which we will be live streaming. But some of the developments that we're going to be doing offline will be based on what they do in the military, particularly the TV show MASH, if you ever seen that, watch it on YouTube or something like that on Amazon. But we're going to be modeling the CBs, MASH, and then successor to MASH, which is CASH, which is I'll go through that. So I'm going straight from Wikipedia, and let's put in MASH unit. Okay, and MASH, M-A-S-H, acronym. And like I said, it's a TV show name that is a very popular TV show. MASH stands for Mobile Army Surgical Hospitals. And I'm going straight off Wikipedia because we'll be modeling what they did. Were U.S. Army field hospital units conceptualized in 1946 as replacements for the World War II era auxiliary surgical group hospital units, which had become obsolete. MASH units were in operation in the Korean War and the Gulf War before being phased out early in the 2000s. Each MASH unit had about 60 beds, as well as surgical, nursing, and other enlisted officer officer staff available at all times. MASH units filled a vital role in military medicine, providing support to Army units upwards of 10 to 20,000 soldiers. These units had a low mortality rate compared to others, as the transportation time to hospitals was shorter, resulting in fewer patients dying in the golden hour. Now, what is the golden hour? The first hour after the injury has been first sustained, which is referred to in trauma as the most important hour. The U.S. Army deactivated the last MASH unit on February 16, 2006. The successor to the Mobile Army Surgical Units, also known as MASH, is the Combat Support Hospitals, CSH, also known as CASH. Now let me read about that. Combat Support Hospital. Combat Support Hospital, CHS, pronounced CASH, is a type of modern U.S. Army field hospital. The CASH is transportable by aircraft and trucks and is normally developed to the core support area in standard military-owned demountable containers, cargo containers. Once transported, it is assembled by the staff into a tent hospital to treat tenants. So when we go in, one of the common denominators between MASH, CASH, and even the historic black townships of any town, a lot of your origins of townships, if we're speaking from a historical standpoint, is they typically set up with tents first. So that's what we're going to be doing. Once the transported is assembled by staff, I read that part. Okay. And like, so you can go online and read all about that. The other thing that we'll be modeling is CBs. And for those of you not familiar with the CBs, I'm once again going back to Wikipedia. CB, United States Naval Construction Battalions, better known as the Navy CBs, formed the U.S. Naval Construction Force, also NCF. The CB nickname you can read that in there. Okay. Essentially, they do construction. They have currently active 70,000 personnel. They have 6,927 in reserve personnel and around 14,000 total. Their birthday is December 28, 1941, and they, I guess, formally organized on March 5, 1942. All right, and they've done quite a bit, and they're still active. All right, so we'll be modeling those three institutions, excuse me, in what we do. Okay, now, I wanted to read that because if I have to go out. I wanted to get that out for the day. Matter of fact, excuse me, man. Okay. All right, if you got any questions, comments, trending topics, announcements, 619-768-2945. And let's do it now. Matter of fact, people, I've got to make a run. So here's what we got somebody in the queue. All right, here's what I got to do. I got to play this because I can't take the call right this moment, but I will be able to take it at the, all right, wait a minute. You're going to have to hang in there for a minute. Let me see. Because I got to... something urgent to do on this thing. Where were we? Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll be right, well, not right back, but listen to this. This is one of the things we'll be doing. Then we'll come to the phone lines.
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here. But the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission to produce new products for every corner of the globe that could forever change the way we think of made in China. Step behind the closed doors of modern China into a factory the size of a city. Welcome to the place that calls itself Factory of the World. By the time you finish watching this program, Yupa's 17,000 Chinese workers will produce nearly 20,000 electrical appliances. Every day they churn out 60,000 irons. Every month, Yupa makes 36,000 coffee makers. That's two new machines for every Starbucks on the planet. And every year, these laborers produce a staggering 18 million electric grills. Stacked side by side, they'd span the Atlantic from New York to London. Chances are you own something built right here. Factories like these don't exist in North America or Europe. But they're not uncommon in China, where labor is cheap. Yupa runs on human sweat alone. No need for robots. To ensure non-stop production, workers need a steady stream of parts. Someone has to make sure those parts get to the right place in time. This is Ming Long Pa. He started work at Yupa in 1994.
I'm in charge of production control. Production control is the brain of the factory. Its main function is to coordinate each department.
If any of Yupa's factories run out of parts, Mr. He's job is on the line.
The production line cannot wait. We have to guarantee that our production is smooth. Running out of materials would affect our efficiency, affect our productivity, and affect our revenue. So I have to fix this in the shortest time possible.
Today, a problem at the iron factory needs smoothing out. Workers on the iron line are low on a crucial part. To keep up production, they need 2,000 units, and they need them now.
Just now I found out the main problems here at the iron department. One major problem is the case for model 603. They need 2,000 right now.
Traditional plants use outside suppliers for their components, not Yupa. To slash costs and stay competitive, Yupa builds its own parts on site. So Mr. Hu's supplier is only a bike ride away. But even the supplier is dangerously low on stock. Mr. He has found barely enough parts to last the day. When he gets another urgent call. Now the grill factory is low on a crucial component. Grills are the company's most profitable products. Yupa started producing one line of grills in 1994. Now, 60 assembly lines churn out 800 different models. Workers make one grill every 12 seconds. That's 50,000 grills per day, or 1.5 million per month. Enough grills for every person in Dallas. Grills bring in $350 million a year, but Yupa wants more. Little wonder Lu Jinye acts like a general leading his troops to war. By next year, managers expect workers to crank out $500 million worth of grills. Yupa's profits have to rise to outmuscle the competition. Mr. Ye supervises 850 workers on 30 lines.
We have to coordinate all these workers and pull all their thoughts into one. It takes teamwork to accomplish our goals, to get the results we want.
Mr. Ye is obsessed with quality control. His aim? Boost output without compromising quality. In a factory this big, with a production run so massive, even the hyper-efficient Mr. Ye hits a roadblock.
This holder piece holds the grill plate. What we're seeing now is the assembly of this piece. The problem is the size. It's the wrong size.
They've run out of part number 2627. It attaches the core heating element to the frame. Without this simple component, assembly lines will shut down, unless Mr. Ha finds a fresh supply, and soon.
If we don't get them the parts, six production lines will have to stop.
When every part is on hand, grills assemble like a simple puzzle. Wires are linked to the heating element, and the element is fixed to the plate.
When it's not locked down properly, it will fall off. If it falls off, it will burn the hands of our customers and consumers. This job is very important.
Then it's time to connect the power cord.
The brown wire is live and the green wire is neutral. The one with the writing on it matches the brown wire. Connect them and that makes the wire live.
Each grill is inspected for flaws in construction or appearance. Finally, every grill is tested to make sure everything is in working order. On a typical day, Mr. Ye's team must make 700 of Yupa's 50,000 grills. Missing parts cause delays, cost Yupa a fortune, and force workers into overtime to meet their quota. Finding the missing parts falls to Mr. Ha, and the pressure is on.
那这样的话，那个我先提议再先回去，然后那边先紧急生产，好，然后等一下你就赶快送过去，好，OK，好，谢谢。
Mr. Huh finally arrives, and he has good news.
小叶，小六。
He's found 2,000 parts to keep the lines moving, and 50,000 more are on the way. Mr. He's day has ended on a high note. He heads home to a company-subsidized apartment only minutes away.
Mom,
his wife, Hong Zhang-yu, also works for the plant. Together, they lead a life of relative luxury. Family life in China is a communal affair. His parents and his in-laws live here, thanks to Yupa. It's one more reason workers are fiercely loyal to their company.
Our products all have the Made in China tag. I hope our products can bring to consumers a sense of joy, a sense of it's worth it. This is my biggest wish.
Fulfilling that wish will come at a cost.
When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Yupa's next generation of workers must leave their families behind and devote their lives to the company. It's a place tourists never see. The new face of modern China. Competitive, hungry for profits, and ready to take on the world. Located near the city of Xiaomeng, the Yupa complex sprawls for 1.8 square kilometers, almost the size of Monaco.
We have about over 20 buildings here. You know, the largest building, you know, equal like 4 football fields. You can have 60 to 70 assembly lines. Each assembly line can have 25 to 35 workers in the line.
25 years ago, there were no factories here, only farms. In the 1980s, the Chinese government decided capitalism wasn't so bad after all. The communist regime established so-called special economic zones, designated places for free markets and foreign investments. Yupa, a Taiwanese company, moved here in 1988. In a few short years, it became the largest manufacturer of irons, electric grills, and espresso makers in the world. Yupa is a city unto itself, with restaurants and convenience stores, soccer fields and basketball courts, and living quarters for everyone from students to families. Success made it big, and size keeps it successful. Mass production runs push down costs. Almost all parts are made on-site, keeping supply costs low and parts within easy reach.
Because we are in this location pretty much isolated, we don't have satellite suppliers around us to build, you know, parts for us. So we had to do it in-house, and we had to do it in a large scale.
Yupa's main advantage is a cheap and endless labor force, ready to work for a fraction of a Western wage. 16-year-old Mao Fen Guo left her family and came here in 2008. But Guo isn't just looking for work. She's here to escape poverty and make her mother proud. In China, many parents prefer sons to daughters.
My mother has only two daughters. She's always upset about that. And in order to not let her down, I must work harder and harder.
Guo is a worker in training. With about 1,000 other students, she attends Yupa's on-site trade school. To get here, she had to pass entry exams and pay Yupa tuition. Now she's enrolled in 3 years of study and hands-on training at the factory. If she does well, Guo hopes for a job at Yupa.
At the very beginning, I thought it was very hard. But now that I've gone through all this, it's easier. There's a lot to learn, but I'm still full of confidence.
Today, she and her classmates are learning everything they ever wanted to know and more about irons. To get a job, Guo must learn the ins and outs of every product line.
We're changing constantly. Last time, we were making grills. Then we changed to coffee makers, and now electric irons.
Workers on 27 production lines pump out an iron every 15 seconds, and as many as 60,000 irons a day. Production includes at least 10 separate brands for dozens of companies. With over 30 steps to assembly, iron making is intricate work. And there's no room for error. Assembly starts with a water spray unit, made up of springs, rubber, and washers. With training and practice, it snaps into the spout in seconds.
If it's not closed tight, it will leak or blow. Then it won't work properly.
Now the sprayer and spout are joined to the handle. The two parts of the water reservoir are placed in a heating machine. That melts the space between them and makes the reservoir watertight.
Welding is an important part of production. However, it will be easy as long as we follow our operational guidelines.
Next, the thermostat is attached to the base.
You need to make sure you're using the correct format before you insert the base. Using a wrong base can lead to fire. Wiring is also important. Where there is a wiring mistake, there's hidden trouble.
A plastic buffer is placed between the heating element and the handle to keep the handle and the user's hand from getting too hot. After that, the plug is welded to the back of the iron.
We're connecting the wire for the power supply. I can do about 4 to 5 pieces every minute and 300 pieces an hour.
Once the spray and steam buttons are attached, it's testing time. First, the steam and squirting functions. Second, the iron's electrical system. Faulty units are either repaired or removed. Finally, irons that pass inspection are packed up and shipped away. The team won't cut corners or settle for second best. Today, Guo and her classmates will put classroom theory into practice and work the iron mine. For a teenager from a small town, living and working in a giant factory can be overwhelming.
My life is not as hard as it was before. I'm getting used to this place now.
Work on the iron line goes better than expected. For Guo, juggling work and school isn't that difficult. The hard part is leaving family and living far from home.
I guess it's learning how to be independent. When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Like China, Guo is adapting to a new world of high technology and tough international competition. And like China itself, she's determined to succeed.
I don't see myself working on the production line forever, doing the same job. Maybe I'm a bit arrogant or too confident about myself, but I want a better future.
For some people, a better future keeps them married to their job. Workers at UPA are married to the company. Based in southeast China, UPA is one of the biggest factories on the planet. Today and every day, its 17,000 workers are getting the world ready for breakfast. In the next 24 hours, it will produce 1,200 conventional coffee makers. Over the next 30 days, these assembly lines will deliver 210,000 cappuccino espresso machines. In the space of 1 year, nearly 2.5 million coffee makers will pour out of UPA and into the kitchens of the world. At the center of all this is Young Lee.
We already have 200 or 300 styles, and we develop and add over 40 new styles every year.
Lee's mandate is crucial and broad. Tackle any problem that could slow down non-stop production.
We have to make every effort to find these problems and to solve them. We have to make sure that every process is working perfectly. Manufacturing shouldn't be delayed because of these problems.
Today, he's got a brand new kind of problem. One of UPA's big clients has designed a new coffee maker. It's up to Lee to build a working prototype to entice the client into going ahead with mass production. Hundreds of UPA jobs and millions of dollars in potential business are now in Lee's hands.
Making prototypes is a large portion of my job and is vitally important to the development of the company.
Lee starts by assembling the heating system for the water and steam. Then he carefully places it into the main body. Just when Lee's ready to assemble it all, there are parts missing. The supplier is just a walk away, a long walk, but Lee doesn't mind the distance. Someone special is waiting for him at the supply depot. The person helping him today is his girlfriend. These perks make UPA more than a place of work. With a workforce of 17,000, many of them married with kids, this factory city turns office space into personal space.
Sometimes we work together. For example, if we need the help from the technician to solve production problems, then we meet each other afterwards.
Li Yang Li works in the parts supply department. She first came to UPA in 2004.
We fell in love at first sight. I always think it must be God who makes her work here and wait for me. Even now, I still think the same.
UPA management encourages these intimate connections. They believe couples that work together are more loyal to the company.
By working in the same company, we can go to work together and take care of each other. We can see each other more often. What's more, we can be with each other when we have a problem.
With the missing parts in hand, Lee is ready for wiring. Making it all fit into the chamber isn't easy.
I will have to organize all the electrical wires properly to make sure the coffee maker operates safely.
But the real test will come after shipping. If the client approves of Lee's model, UPA could get a massive order. If it doesn't, hundreds of jobs are on the line.
If I make the prototype in a sloppy way, our customers will lose confidence in the quality of our products. It will be a great loss to our company.
Weeks later, Lee's model is approved for mass production. And right away, he sets out to create a brand new production line. It takes a week to prepare the assembly line and train the workers to make the new coffee machine.
Making a coffee maker is not an easy job at all. It requires professional knowledge and a profound understanding of coffee culture.
When the prep is done, Factory City springs into action and works with astonishing speed. Lee's prototype took half a day to make. Now line workers churn out 700 machines a day. Lee's shift is done, and when work ends at Factory City, romance begins.
When we're done work, we normally go shopping together or take a walk. It gives us a sense of happiness.
The couple plan to get married at a mass wedding, paid for and organized by the company. All at once, dozens of Yupa workers will tie the knot, while thousands of co-workers look on.
If we take part in the group wedding, with the best wishes of all of our co-workers here, we know we will be getting married in the factory of the world, one dream, and that would be unforgettable.
A mass wedding is the couple's way of showing their love for each other and their passion for Yupa. Chef Xing Ming Li has a passion of his own, feeding the 17,000 workers that power the factory of the world. At Factory City, the day has barely begun. But Chef Xing Ming Li already faces his first daily deadline. Li runs one of five independent restaurants at Yupa. Competition between them is intense. Profits are razor thin. And Lee needs thousands of customers every day just to survive. In his eyes, he's not just serving meals, he's fueling the workers that power the factory of the world.
If they don't eat well, or eat enough, they won't have enough energy. Then they won't perform well at Yupa.
It all starts with fresh ingredients. Beef, pork, bok choy, onions, carrots, and winter melon.
We have all fresh seasonal vegetables here. Whatever you can find from the food market, you can find here.
Everything is washed, sliced, and diced. Yupa churns out millions of kitchen appliances a year. But there are no food processors in Lee's kitchen. Nothing is automated. Everything is done by hand. By 9 a.m., Lee's staff is already racing against the clock.
We'll have to finish everything before 11 o'clock because Yupa staff restaurants all open at 11:30. We have to be there in advance.
In 2 hours, 3,000 workers will stop by for lunch. Lee expects just as many for dinner. This means his staff of 50 must serve 6,000 meals by sunset. That's 125 kilograms of oil, 50 kilograms of beef, and 300 kilograms of pork. That's more than 1 million tons of food every year. His chefs turn stock ingredients into hundreds of delicious dishes.
We can make different cuisines. Our chefs are all the best of their hometown.
Okay. Thank you for being patient. I had to go run an errand. that I did something yesterday, specifically, I had a creditor to pay. So, and for some reason, I only put in half the amount and sent it off because I don't really trust the United States Mail Service on important stuff you need to send through the mail. So then when I got home, I checked my PayPal, and I had more money in it than I thought I would have because, you know, I just paid off this expense. So I'm looking at, wait a minute, something's wrong here. I don't want to spend this extra money I thought I had. Something's missing here. Then I said, damn, I only paid half of what I was supposed to pay. And I sent them out, it cost me like 13, yesterday, UPS ground, $13. Then I said, all right, man, I need to get out here this morning and then send in the other half, which I usually just send in one payment every month. And I had to pay an additional $11. So anyway, I had to do that for my peace of mind. Now I have peace of mind. Okay. I have peace of mind that debt is paid. In any event, let's see. Now, as we, before I went to, we were talking about at the beginning, when we start doing our offline events, which we'll be doing two things. We'll be teaching people how to build their own off-grid house, tiny house. And off-grid means you won't have any no utility bills. You'll have water and all that and electricity, and you'll run your flat screen and charge your smartphones. But you won't, it'll be done through renewable energy, solar energy, and water as well. Okay. And the way we're going to be setting up camp is we're going to be modeling mass units. Like the TV show, when the Army goes in for deployment or rapid deployment, they basically set up like communities or villages practically overnight. So that's the way we're going to be setting up. And even historically, if you look at a lot of your major towns around the world, a lot of them started with just somebody with a tent. And a lot of the historic black townships, most of those started with tent camps. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to start that way, and then from that, we'll be, building the portable structures. We're not putting up any permanent housing. Now, you can take these houses and make them permanent, but we want to make them portable and temporary structures that we can take down, because once they become permanent, then it gets classified by the local tax authority as real estate, and when it becomes real estate, your de facto senior partner is the local tax authority. They're going to send you a tax bill every year, which typically goes up even when you have a homestead exemption. And if you don't pay for whatever reason, then they can auction off your house. So we'll explain that as we go along. Anyway, so... that's what we talked about at the beginning of that. And what's tomorrow, Friday? We might have a suggestion here. What's the suggestion? Oh, hold on, let me read it real quick. A panel discussion on, okay. You might want to be on a panel. Oh, that's for me being on somebody else's thing. Okay, well, all right, so much for that. So let's go to the phone lines. Wait a minute, who called me? Oh, man, I don't even know who this is. Okay, all right. No matter of fact, hold it, let me see. I'm coming to the phone lines here. Wait a minute. Okay. Oh, okay. I might be. Anyway, well, I'll call him back later. All right, so let's go to the phone lines here. Thank you for waiting patiently. Now I got to get back into my studio. Okay, let's see. And today is Thursday. For some reason, I thought it was Wednesday, but today is Thursday. Tomorrow will be Friday. It is June 1st. The year's halfway up. But the way we're going to attack this military style will catch us up and slingshot us into the future. Okay. No, wait a minute. Let me see. 773, your mic is open.
Grand Rising.
Grand Rising, thank you for being very patient. I had to make a 2-mile round trip. That's why I put on that long audio. Anyway, but I'm back. So, Reba, what's on your mind? What's on the agenda? What's happening?
Okay, I do have a free lesson in Spanish for you, just a little mini lesson. You said thanks for your patience. So it's gracias por su paciencia. What word do you hear in there? It sounds... What am I talking about?
I picked up gracias. Say it again.
Right. You told the audience and myself, gracias por su paciencia. You said, thanks for your patience. Which word is patience? Gracias por su paciencia.
Not the last word. You know what?
Well, it's going to sound like they're cognate.
Hold it. Say it again, because I heard something that sounded like patience.
En español, gracias por su paciencia.
That's it. Por su?
Paciencia.
That one, I had to see it to pronounce it. That's how I pick up stuff.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Gracias, hold it. I'm doing the whole sentence. Gracias, give me the next word.
Por.
P-O-R.
P-O-R. Su, S-U.
That's please.
A different word.
You said S-U, okay. Gracias por su. All right.
Paciencia. P-A-C-I.
You said T or P?
P as in Paul.
You said P?
P as in Paul.
Uh-huh.
A-C-I.
Yeah.
E-N.
You said E-I. Uh-huh.
Okay. P-A-C-I.
C-A-C-I. That's the last word.
P as in Paul. P as in patient. P as in patient.
All right.
P-A-C-I. Your phone is breaking up. I don't think you can hear everything I'm saying. Can you hear me clearly now? Because on your end, your phone sounds broken up. But I'm walking around. I'm going to sit still because I don't know if that's what's tough. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if the...
I got gracias por su.
Okay. Now, the next word is patience. And that's spelled...
please.
No, please. No, please is not in there. Please is por favor.
Yeah.
So you said thank you. That's gracias. Por su, the last word is paciencia. And in Spanish, it's spelled P-A-C-I-E-N-C-I-A.
Okay.
Paciencia.
Por su, that's a long word. Placencia.
Take your time. So with
Placencia.
Spanish, it has a lot of syllables.
Gracias.
Spanish. So let's go this so that you won't get frustrated during, so because when you pronounce it, you'll be prepared. So escucharme, listen to this, listen to me. Spanish has more syllables in many of their words than English does. So you have some vowels, you have double
right.
vowels in there, and they're pronounced separately. The I-E and the I-A at the end of paciencia, that last word, are pronounced separately. So the vowels in Spanish, when they're next
uh-huh.
to each other, are pronounced separado, separately, okay? So the word is
paciencia.
There you go. There you go.
Paciencia. Gracias.
Paciencia.
Por su paciencia.
Perfecto. Excelente.
Gracias por su paciencia.
Paciencia.
Okay.
Excellent.
Libre de teacher.
Good job. Aquí bueno, trabajito. So
okay.
I said, let me, before I start talking, I heard you say a phrase,
what,
one of my power phrases that I need. I said, let me share that with you real quick. So I want
right,
to get Asia
I'm
back
glad
on
you
here.
Shared it.
Yeah, because I owe you. We've been trying to do lessons for a while. So I said, let me just steal about 2-3 minutes
okay.
live on the air. We'll teach along the way. And, of course, the listening audience can benefit from that, too. So that audio clip that you shared was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to share that. If you could send me the link, Facebook or what have you. I'm going to share that on the Black Youth Metropolis webpage. We have
right.
WordPress, so I also want my sons to hear that. So regardless as to whether they want to let me know if they're listening, I'm going to play it. You know, my 22-year-old lives with me, so I'm going to play it so it can be audible for them and they can actually
okay.
pick up on what's being shared.
Yeah,
because
the name of that, matter of fact, while I got on my mind, yeah, the name of that, it's a documentary, which is free. I'm just make sure it's still free on what YouTube called Factory City. I bought it
okay.
on Amazon because it's that
okay.
good. But you're going to hear everything that you heard, man. Let me, Factory, it just should be still free on Facebook.
YouTube is doing a lot of free videos and documentaries, too, movies.
Yeah, they got a lot of good stuff on there.
They have YouTube free movies now, my son told me.
Yeah, they got some good free movies on there too. Okay, only thing is now which phone number do I send it to, Reba? 262?
That's fine, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. What the hell? Oh, okay. Okay, you should have it.
Okay, I see it. Thank you.
Right. It's China's largest factory.
Wow. Thank you. So, yeah.
All right.
There was another audio that you shared about the suit. Well, actually, you sent me the video. That is so amazing. So I certainly want to acclimate the inner city youth about
the
culture in China and Japan.
Uh-huh.
Where
no,
I've
China,
told
that's
my son,
China, yeah.
Well, Japan as well, they have a teaching. In the Orient, they have the where the students go to school, they may pay $1,000 for a
right.
class. They're very competitive. Was that Japan or Korea?
Well, you know
so,
what? Well,
they pay $1,000 to learn English.
Oh,
right. And
you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. There's a tutor. And this is something that I like her business model because education is big all around the planet. But there's a tutor, Korean tutor, in South Korea. Her name is Gwen Lee. She's South Korean, or at least that's where she works. And she teaches English, and she earns $500,000 a year teaching English.
That's why you shared that with me, yes. That's what I mean.
Yeah, there are other people. There's another guy. He earns $4 million a year teaching English. Now,
wow.
He doesn't keep all of that $4 million because he has
okay.
other people, language
right.
partners, that, you
right.
know, because it's physically impossible to teach all those people one-on-one. And even
yeah.
Wen Lee, she teaches probably maybe about 1,000 people classroom style within a month.
Okay.
And
awesome.
The rest of it's done online.
Okay. Awesome.
But she makes $500,000. Now, the thing is, there's a lot of people that are trying to learn a whole bunch of different skills. I mean, it's all over the planet. So basically, you just have to find your niche on how to get to that market and then monetize it where, you know, you can make, literally become a millionaire by teaching people stuff. I mean, there are people that are doing well by teaching people how to swim. No, go figure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the first
a friend of mine,
my
he was on here last Friday.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Hey, what's your oldest son want to do?
He wanted to be a lifeguard with the Park District. Back then it was paying like $11 an hour, which is decent money for a young person. So, yeah, so I will certainly mention that to my sons as well. CJ was supposed to be on a moving job today. I don't know if he's oversleeping. So now my grandsons are learning English and Spanish. You still there? No, man. Was a jolly, happy soul. There you go. I got it. Mm-hmm. I got it. Hold the book. Are we still live, Brother LA?
Okay, I don't know if anybody can hear me because I got booted out.
Yeah.
I got booted
I can
out
hear
of
you.
My own show. All right, good. Yeah, I got booted out. So that happens on occasion, so I had to sign back in. Anyway, it's open mic, so Reba, anything you want to put out there, let us know. Like I say, we're at the. Oh, you know what? Matter of fact, for people that's just tuning in, like I said, at today's show is titled, and it's open mic, but I tell it MASH. CHS or MASH Cash and CBs. And what I did was
yeah.
right. I just went from Wikipedia. And matter of fact, let's see. Let me go back to that. MASH.
Can you hear me, Brother LA? Am I audible?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, I can hear you clear. I can hear you clear. All right, MASH stands for Mobile Army Surgical Unit, Mobile Army Surgical Hospitals. And they were, I'm reading straight from Wikipedia. They were U.S. Army Field Hospital units conceptualized in 1946 as replacements for the World War II era auxiliary surgical group hospital units, which had become obsolete. Okay, now. And, of course, the TV show and the movie MASH is all about that. Now, later, all right, MASH units in the United States were deactivated on February the 16th, 2006. The successors to the Mobile Army Surgical Hospitals, also known as MASH, are Combat Support Hospitals. Also known as CSH, And that acronym is pronounced as CASH, which stands for Combat Support Hospital. Is a type of modern U.S. Army field hospital. The CASH is transportable by aircraft and trucks and is normally delivered to the Corps support area in standard military-owned demountable containers or cargo containers. Once transported, it is assembled by staff onto a tent hospital to treat patients. So essentially, what we shall be doing is, we're not setting up hospitals or nothing like that, but to build the little, teaching schools, stations, villages, or whatever, we'll be basically operating the same way. We'll be going in with tents and it's in development. So, because that's the way we'll be able to operate. So, and really speed things up offline the way I want them to be speed up, because it's June 1st already. So, we'll give you more information on that tomorrow. Anyway, so Reba, you have an event coming up this month or next month?
So it's this month, and it's going to be Friday, June 23rd at the Grand Ballroom, Chicago. So it's an investors event. There's going to be a presentation on the investment opportunity. WF Doc, my music producer, is he's the executive producer for this event. We have vendor tables available. The vendor tables are only $50. We wanted to just make it affordable. Those that are investing in their business, if you have products, physical products, that you can bring to a venue such as this, the tables are $50. $50 donation. It is a fundraiser to build Star City. Stars, plural, Star City. It's going to be in another country, and we are going to present the opportunity. So we have tickets are on sale for $50 for a couple or two people. It doesn't have to be a couple. It doesn't have to be a couple. But the individual tickets are $75. So there's going to be food, music, presentation, an opportunity for networking, and there's already a team of investors that are coming in. They have been invited and confirmed. They'll be there. They're coming from all over the country. And so we will actually continue to promote and leave this opportunity open for investors and business owners. So,
what's the name of this project? It's called what? Star City?
Star City. It's being produced by Cash Now Entertainment, and WF Doc is the founder of Cash Now Entertainment. So it's going to be at the Grand Ballroom, Chicago, 6351 South Cottage Grove, Friday, June 23rd, 7 p.m. until 1 a.m. So there's going to be an after party, an opportunity for networking, a one-hour open bar. So, you come in. We'll let you know when the open bar starts. So get your drink at the top of the hour and, just enjoy. We'll have raffles. A live DJ, a DJ doing some music. We will perform our song as well. It's called Celebrate Your Life, which is the focus, celebrating your life. So we're giving people opportunities to obtain wealth, build generational wealth, and to prosper in spirit. So we, Doc is a Christian as well, so we are not, we're impressing upon others to be of good spirit and encourage our young people as well. So this opportunity is not just open to older adults. We want the young people to come in if they have a business. If you've made money in your business, we want to show you another opportunity to invest where you can get double and more than likely triple on your investment, return on your investment. So the number to call would be 773-449-8839. Again, the number is 773-449-8839. To Cash App, that would be, of course, the Cash App sign, dollar sign, Icy by Me. That's dollar sign, I-C-Y-B-Y-M-E.
Okay. Now, Star City, can you give us any leaking information what that project's about?
You know, I did ask Doc to come on. He's, like, super, super busy. He's doing a lot of the groundwork himself, the promoting, the marketing, and so forth. So he calls me at any given time. I'll see if I can reach him right quick so he can share some basic information. So one quick moment.
Matter of fact, let's see. Are you calling him now? All right.
Grandson.
You got two of them now, don't you? While Reba's doing that, I'm trying to find something quick. 2 minutes. Let's see. Training day.
So, Brother L.A., I was able to reach Doc.
Okay.
He's going to get prepared to speak. He just needs a couple of minutes. But he is on three-way, so I merged the call. So he's just on mute for a couple of minutes so he can get himself together and he'll get his chair so he's available.
Let's take a two-minute break and for training day, and then we'll see if he's available then.
What?
Okay.
Like that. Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you did. Hey, Jay! Hey! Jay! 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 Come back here! Jay! You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk. Jay! I need my money! Jay! Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit? Jay! You think you can do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program, nigga. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of day. Who the fuck you think you fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go and walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me.
Alonzo, I forgot his name. In a movie Training Day, I believe Denzel Washington, when he won the Academy Award, it was that scene right there that got him. He really nailed that scene. But his character had a, well, overall his day was good until that came to that scene. And then, I'm not going to give it away, but if you haven't seen Training Day, Denzel Washington, I highly recommend it. Anyway, Reba, I'm back to see if your guy's back.
Awesome. That was an amazing scene. It was surprising when he just came on out with that, the empty. That was like a climax of the movie.
That scene right there. Yeah, that scene right there. And you know what? He had lived that.
Oh, he
had lived
did.
That scene. That was not written. Yeah, that was not written as part of the
original. He was ad living.
Oh. He was ad living.
I can tell. I can tell. Yeah, as when you played it, I never picked up on it that way, but I could sense that he was like he was natural with it.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He was that.
Well, that is still saying that he's on. I don't know if he's on speaker. I was get asking him before he's getting ready, but I should have said speaker. Okay,
yeah.
Awesome, great.
Just give me a few moments.
Okay. Well, Pass Down Entertainment is the producer of this event. Yeah, so he said that he wouldn't mind listening.
How many are you babysitting today?
Well, I'm caring for my two grandchildren. So Leo, the 4-year-old, had a birthday party on yesterday. We were at the beach. We had such an amazing time. So that is Eli. He's teething. So
okay.
Elijah Zaire is what we call it. Elijah Zaire with bruises. The wealthy side of my family. My mother's side is 50-50. I kid you not. My parents left a legacy of wealth, so I will be certainly. My grandson Vivani is awake now. He's listening in, so they'll grow up on Reba Media with DIY TV.
Okay.
So they'll be learning a lot. That's just myself. So yeah, we're gonna help build these tiny mobile solar cabinets. Yeah.
And your brother just got married, so your family is booming.
Yes, and I stayed at one of my brother's houses in Pennsylvania. He had just gotten a 10-year tenant out of one of his houses, so I was able to be there. And it's pretty interesting. I was able to meditate. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that your first time in Pittsburgh, or have you been to Pittsburgh before?
It had been almost 30 years. And I didn't recognize his house. His house seemed bigger. I remember the fireplace, but then he had a place in Indiana. He was his rent in Indiana when he first got married and came, this side of the country. He was in Indiana. Was it Whiting, Indiana? But the rent was like $400 for a house. And I was like, wow, this is not too long ago. $400, and he had a big fireplace. I think it was a 4-bedroom house.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall. But I did not really recognize this house. It was interesting. It seemed smaller. I was like, you've been here before? And I'm like, wow. So he was stationed in Fort Drum, New York. So I was there caring for when he and my first sister-in-law, so I have a new sister-in-law, when he and my nephew's mother had PT, physical training for the military, I would care for. They could be gone for like 2 months at a time, Yeah. Okay. Welcome. Welcome to Reba Media and DIY TV.
Oh, thank you.
So if you don't mind sharing about the event, June 23rd.
Oh, no, I don't. What's up, world? How you doing out there? My name is Doc for short. And I'm going for Cash Management. And we're doing the event of June 23rd at the Grand Ball. So it's a fundraiser dinner. So what we're trying to do, trying to money to help build schools and hospitals for the less fortunate people out there that need the help. So, but these people don't have much. I mean, if you ever see what I saw, you will be moved just like I am. You know, so we are to do this to be a blessing, to be that angel to those people out that way. You know, because I know out here in Chicago we need help too, but it's nothing to compare to what people need. You know, so I think us all putting together to come out there to, you know, to do our part, I think that's for those people. So that's why I call in on everybody to, you know, that touch your heart. I pray that you come out there and see what this fundraiser is about. More to this. So when you get out there, we will be able to explain in detail, you know, about this fundraiser dinner. But the key to this dinner is people who need the help. So I'm just praying, you know, calling out to you guys to come out, you know, to be part of this event.
What's the name? She mentioned something like, what, Star City?
Star City is the name of the city that we're trying to build. So
okay.
What it is, it's a city that we feel like stars could be coming out of those cities. You know, people with great talent will be coming out of those cities, you know. And that city is a city of, you know, it's going to be God's city because we're going to run it like, you know, we're going to run it in a way that, you know, push God agenda first. You know, it's not going to be a city like Las Vegas and other places, but we're going to make God first. We're not going to make religion first. I mean, God first, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, but.
What's the location for?
Liberia, West Africa.
Okay.
We got a website. Yeah, we got a website people can check out. The website is cashnowentertainment.now.site.
Okay.
So when people go out, they can read a little bit more about what's going on, and they can actually see the land that we got. To build the city on, you know what I'm saying? They will have the opportunity to actually see the land, have the video of the land, you know, and I'm there and I'm talking about what's going to be going on this land. So people can go on the website right now and double check that. And once again, the website is cashnowentertainment.now.site.
Okay. I see your Facebook page.
Okay. Yeah, we got a Facebook and all that stuff. But I'm talking about the website. The website explain a little bit more detail or give a little bit more information about what's going on.
Well, I commend you and everybody connected with this. Developing your own town, and I think that's where, you know what, be honest about it, that's the best way to go. Get your own whatever acres it might be. It might be 2 acres, it might be 40 acres, it might be 4,000, whatever it is. Congratulations for being proactive and starting your own town.
Thank you so much.
I think that's the ultimate way to self-empower yourself. Group economics, it's not, congratulations. That's all I can say.
Thanks so much. You know, when I was in, can I explain a little something to you?
Sure.
When I went to West Africa, when I went to my hometown, and what really triggered me to do this was seeing a young kid trying to scale something. He got to be no more than 4 years or 5 years old. No, I'm saying to myself, this is a baby. You know, but she needs to sell in order for her family to eat. And that breaks my heart. That really breaks my heart. Because even though I was born in Africa, my father and my mother, they was in a good state when I was born. My father was doing diamond mining, and he was selling diamonds to people from America and other part of the world. And my mom was selling used clothes, you know, which was, and they were making good money. So I never experienced that lifestyle of not having nothing, you know. But I experienced it after my father left, my mother moved to the United States. That's when hell broke loose for my family. But my father left, I was 5 years old. And my mom was raising five kids by herself because my father had turned his back. And, you know, that's when I experienced hardship. But I wasn't selling to feed a family. You see what I'm saying? At the age of five. You know, when my father left, I'm pretty sure my mom had the money. We all went to good schools. It's just unfortunately, we was going to the school wasn't getting paid, so we was getting kicked out of the school. My mom, little business she was doing was hurt because she was raising five kids. No. But to see that little girl trying to tell me something at the age of five, but to see her family, and what she was selling wasn't much. You know? I mean, it was so heartbreaking. And when I walked through this area, I see a lot of, you know, places that don't have running water, no electricity, you know, and people trying to survive. And that they live in a rural area that don't have nothing. And me, I'm a city guy. I was been a city guy. Where we used to live is considered as a middle class neighborhood in Africa. So we always had everything we wanted. We had a good marketplace. We had a good shopping center area. Running water. We had electricity. But this is my first time here. And all the stuff I used to see on TV in America, I used to say no, that's not true. But when I went back recently, I experienced that. I was like, oh my God! So this is where they got all this footage from. They never got the footage from the city. They got the footage from the rural area, which is in America we call it in Africa they call it interior. So that's where they get all these videos that they be showing on TV that the kids appreciate and all that stuff. They get these videos from the country area. They don't get it from the from the city area. You know, because I experienced it when I went to the rural area, which is the country. I experienced that. So I said to myself, like, as long as I'm alive and God bless me, I need to be a blessing to these people. You see what I'm saying? So that's how this whole thing came about, you know, because I can't be alive and well and doing okay in America and these people, and I can give and I can provide my help. I'm well connected with a lot of good people, and I'm sure if I reach out to these people, they won't mind helping me out either. Those are things, those are what moved me, man. It moved me. I was hurt to see the people even not telling you bathroom. Old bathroom in the house, they got to go in the forest area to defecate. It's sad, man. Sad. So that's the reason why I feel like Star City is necessary. It need to be built. It's not me trying to be the next Akon. I'm not trying to do that. I'm not trying to build a futuristic city that use Bitcoin. No.
Right.
I'm trying to build something that regular people can see, regular people can live, right? Understand.
I commend you on what you're doing. Matter of fact, come back here as often as you wish to promote it. And for those of you who don't have your passport yet, get your passport make a trip over to make to see this. Matter of fact, I already have my passport. Mine doesn't come up for renewal. I'm gonna renew my passport a year because you give it for 10 years. So I'm gonna renew mine I'm gonna send in a year early, just so I can, you know, have enough time on it because you know I don't want it running close.
Yeah, you gotta do a year early because if not, you know, you won't be able to travel internationally.
Right, right. So come back here as often as possible because you can educate people. For those people who don't have a passport, you can, you know, give them some instruction on that. Then, of course, you can promote what you're doing with this as much as you want. That will be an education in itself just to travel there.
Yeah, let me say something real fast. I think I lost my train of thought. Yeah, traveling to Africa, you gonna need like a visa. Most people should go to Liberia.
Okay. That's on my list, Liberia. I know a little bit about it, and it's particularly there's Maryland County, Liberia. That's a destination within Liberia I would like to visit because of the history of that county.
Yeah, my family from Maryland County, from that area, Maryland and Plano County. Yeah, that's from.
Yeah.
Originally
that was the Republic of, originally was its own country, the Republic of Africa, and it is just interesting how former slaves They got the resources together and they chartered a boat or whatever and went over there and they bought a whole bunch of land. But that whole Liberia piece is very so come back here as often as you want. Often as you want. Promote this project.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Good. All right. Well, we're out of time for today. But thank you, Reba. Thank you, guests. Thank you, all listeners. Everyone have a good rest of the day. And play, you know, while it's January 1st, be safe.